The meeting will come to order. We have a quorum. Representative Morrow, would you like to
approve the minutes?
Thank you, Representative Morrow. We've approved the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, we will begin our meeting. I'm not sure if you want to come up together or singly. That's whatever your choice. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to our committee.
Thank you very much.
You two, say your name for the tape and welcome again.
Chair Chumba and members of the committee, my name is Daisha Hankhouse. I work with the Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators, and I'm also the editor of Ag in Action, which is a publication of the organization. I provided a copy for you. You probably have it in your packet. You can just take a look at it at your leisure. The MAAE is made up of about 315 members, composed of agricultural educators from the high school, post-secondary, and adult levels. They seek to advance agricultural education in Minnesota. The MAAE strives to provide leadership opportunities, service, and advocacy for its members, as well as recruit and prepare students who have a desire to teach ag education. The MAAE works with legislation affecting agricultural education in Minnesota. Last year, the organization helped to prove that Ag Ed is essential, and with the help of Representative Randy Demmer and others, legislation was passed to allow agri-science classes to fulfill a science credit requirement towards graduation. This is also true with 1/2 credits of economics, which can be taught through an agri-economics class. As you know, agricultural education is not just about milking cows and baling hay. Although production agriculture is an important part of ag education, this does not represent the big picture of what this subject area is about. Science, math, and technology are the cornerstones of ag education. I have a list from the Minnesota Department of Education of the various classes taught in ag education programs around the state. Some of these classes include animal science, aquaculture, plant and soil sciences, natural resources management, biotechnology, landscaping, ag mechanics technology, forestry science, wildlife conservation, leadership, agribusiness management, and computer applications in agriculture. The governor precisely mentioned in his State of the State address that we have to advance students in math, science, and technology, and ag education is one of the keys to the pieces of this puzzle. Last week, your committee toured the Agricultural and Food Sciences Academy, and I hope that you got a good feel for all the positive things that agricultural education can do. According to the Minnesota Department of Education, there are 186 agricultural education secondary programs and 232 agriculture teachers on the secondary level in Minnesota. For fiscal year 2006, 23,107 students were enrolled in at least one ag ed class in grades 10 through 12. That's 23,107 students. It may surprise you that three of our ag ed programs with the highest enrollment are in the metro area. The Ag and Food Sciences Academy has 225 students, Stillwater has 448, and Forest Lake has 814. The MAAE welcomes the opportunity to work with this committee and enhance ag education programs and encourage even more students to participate in these highly valuable programs. I'd now like to introduce to you Mr. Tom Apple, the president of the Ag Teachers Association.
Good morning. Could you state your name for the record, please?
I'm Tom Apple. I currently serve as president of the Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators. Chairman Fakumba and committee members, I appreciate the opportunity to be here on behalf of Minnesota's agricultural education instructors. I myself are a high school agricultural education instructor at Mountain Lake. Our community is located approximately 60 miles southwest of Mankato. As you're well aware, the legislature last year provided us the opportunity to go ahead and utilize agricultural science and agricultural economics courses to meet graduation credit towards high school graduation. This is a very, very crucial piece of legislation for our programs. As you look at agricultural education, it's an ever-changing program, and it is constantly evolving. On the screen, you'll be able to go ahead and see why we have to be concerned with academic integration in agriculture. It certainly provides, and we believe it provides, an excellent context for teaching science, economics, mathematics, and perhaps even other disciplines. We also believe that it's a great opportunity and provides choices and options for students, parents, and school districts to meet graduation requirements. It certainly provides the opportunity to maintain existing agricultural science courses. Last fall we did a survey and we found that approximately 44% of the agricultural programs in Minnesota had already, prior to this legislation, been offering agricultural science courses to meet science standards and to meet science credit. And finally, it certainly provides flexibility within the local school district to go ahead and meet legislative mandates. After the approval of this legislation, we went ahead and said, and got together as a group and said, what do we really need to do to make this legislation effective? We certainly didn't want to have the legislation go through and then just kind of leave it sitting there on the shelf. So what we did is we formed an academic integration committee. This committee is composed of representatives of our association, of the Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators. There are representatives from the Minnesota Department of Education and the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council. That committee has met probably three or four times over the last year, actually less than a year, and has put together a number of things. So we haven't just kind of left that sort of sit there. On the next slide here, we looked at that and we said, what tasks should come before this committee, and how should we go ahead and make sure that we're delivering quality agricultural science and agricultural economics curriculum and programs to our students in Minnesota. We looked at that, we kind of broke it down into four tasks, as you can see there. One of our first tasks was that of curriculum development. Well, we all understand that it's the local responsibility of the district, the responsibility of the local district, to go ahead and provide curriculum and in-service and make sure those instructors are in tune with what has to be taught. We felt it would be a really, really good idea if we could come up with some standardized curriculums to go ahead and offer to students in Minnesota. One of the first ones is going to be our natural resources science curriculum. Joel Larson is with us today from the Department of Education. Certainly he'll be coming forward to bring up one of those CDs on the floor to go ahead and thanks, Jerry. To go ahead and explain that program. It's really a really neat CD from the standpoint that we have taken Minnesota's academic standards in science and we have matched those standards to agricultural courses, and you'll get a really good preview of that one. The second thing that we've accomplished in terms of curriculum development, we have worked with the University of Minnesota College and the Schools program. In a nutshell, what that program allows is for juniors and seniors in high school to go ahead and take credit through the University of Minnesota in either plant science or animal science. They're concurrently enrolled as a high school student and as a University of Minnesota student, and in that course, those courses, of course, will receive university credit. Those courses have also been used to go ahead and meet science requirements. At this point, in this current year, we have approximately 5 to 6 schools in the state that are doing that. We completed an agricultural technology conference here in January. We had a lot of interest there. It appears as though we'll have about 10 to 12 schools that will participate in that particular program, and we hopefully that will continue to grow. One of the major initiatives or tasks we looked at was, how are we going to service our instructors? How are we going to give them the skills and knowledge to go ahead and be able to deliver quality agricultural science and quality agricultural economics? The first one there under in-service is to work with Minnesota Council on Economic Education. That, again, is a group at the University of Minnesota. They received a MEALC grant, and they will be going ahead and participate in a week-long seminar. The title of that seminar is Economic Systems. It's going to be at the University of Minnesota. It is specifically targeted to go ahead and provide in-service to instructors, agricultural instructors, in the economics area. There will be some follow-up workshops throughout the year that they'll also focus on, and the intent of that, of course, is to provide excellent in-service. This last summer, our second bullet under instructor in-service, this last summer we completed our summer conference in Rochester. Obviously, the Mayo Clinic was used as a resource. To make the long story short, working with the Mayo Clinic, we will have the opportunity to go have 8 to 10 of our instructors participate in a week-long genomics research project at Rochester, at Mayo and Rochester. We're going to develop that. The other bullets on there, we are planning 2 and 3 day in-service and workshops pertaining to animal science, plant science, a number of other science sort of things, including natural resources. The third and fourth element there that we haven't totally got worked out yet is that of assessment and data collection. I'm confident that some folks are going to say, you know, can agriculture education deliver quality science? I'm convinced we can. Now, eventually, imagine in the next couple of years, we're going to have to develop some type of assessment to prove that yes, our students are capable of learning science, and they are, in fact, learning science. The last bullet there was that of data collection. Eventually, we need to get a really good handle on how many students are impacted, the types of courses, and all the other facts and figures that are necessary in today's world to go ahead and justify these type of things. The last screen here that I'd like to leave you with is kind of where do we see agricultural education in Minnesota? What are the future kind of hold for us? What kind of challenges are we going to face? As you're well aware, agriculture is an ever-changing, ever-evolving sort of a discipline. I bolted that with about 4 or 5 things there. The first one, we certainly are going to need to continue the integration of science, economics, mathematics, and perhaps other disciplines. The issue of agriculture instructor teacher shortage, whether that be in the high school level, the farm business management level, wherever it happens to be, we still in Minnesota do not have an overabundance of trained individuals to go into education in agriculture and or to enter the business of agriculture. So that certainly is a concern for us. We have not been able to expand a lot of our programs in Minnesota. Primary reason for that is the instructor shortage, and obviously funding also. But if we have a position open, we don't have 20 or 30 applicants for a position. There's not an overabundance of instructors. And perhaps maybe the last, but the biggest concern here that we are facing agriculture education, I refer to it somewhat as our limiting factors. Additional graduation requirements. You need to understand that there are only so many hours in the day. And as we start to cope with graduation requirements, we need to be very cognizant and recognize the fact that there aren't that many hours available a day, and that becomes an issue for us. Teacher availability, are in fact there going to be enough science teachers? Are there going to be enough agricultural teachers who go ahead and meet requirements? Time and funding, of course, is always an issue. Some solutions to this, obviously, we need to partner with business and industry. We certainly need to maybe consider moving some of the requirements into lower grades. And then, of course, MEAL-C is certainly going to be a factor that we're going to try to work with in the future. So we'll take questions, I think, probably at the end after everything. I'd like to introduce Joel Larson. Joel represents the Agriculture Education Program Specialist from the Minnesota Department of Education. He's going to come forward and discuss our Natural Resources CD a little bit.
Mr. Appel. Yes. There are a few of the members on the committee who would like to ask some questions of you, if that's okay. If not,
that would be just fine, sure.
Okay. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Appel, if I could just ask you to expand a little bit upon the development within our college and university teaching programs in order to provide the teachers that you're talking about, what efforts are being made to work with our college and universities on the secondary education licensing programs, requirements, and options for helping develop agriculture-related teachers?
Sure, I'm going to go ahead and answer that question. I'm not going to necessarily, I know what's coming up here, so I'm going to keep my comments to answer that question very, very short. Julie Chess from Minnesota Agriculture Education Leadership Council will be commenting on that. The MEAL-C was created in 1997 because of a very serious impending situation in Minnesota, and that is that the University of Minnesota was down to basically one professor in the agriculture education department. The last 10 years, and Julie will go through that, we've made some excellent efforts through MEAL-C to go ahead and enhance that. In my opinion, we probably have plateaued at this point. We do have recruitment efforts going on. We are trying to go ahead and recruit high school students. Those type of things. We do have scholarship programs, so we are making efforts, but at this time we kind of have plateaued.
Madam Chair, if I may just follow up, we have other teaching programs at other colleges and universities in the state, and we're working with those institutions as well.
Okay. There has maybe perhaps been some discussion, maybe we need to look at other sites for agriculture education. Julie will explain our 2+2 program. That was one of the first initiatives that came out in the late 90s where instructors, potential students, could take 2 years at a post-secondary institution, Ridgewater or Minnesota West or Crookston, and then spend the last 2 years at the university. We have made some efforts in there, but certainly maybe looking at a Marshall or Minnesota State University in Mankato, some of those institutions, in approaching them and trying to expand our program, certainly may have some merit.
Representative Hydrickson.
Thank you. I'm going to save most of my questions for the next speaker, but just to follow up and represent Morrow, and I have a discussion on the side on this as well. I think he's going to the same place. I am. We have a lot of, at least out in the southwestern part of the state, of students that are going to South Dakota State from the state of Minnesota. And it seems to me it would be, especially within the ag sector, you would think that there would be some courses offered out there in ag country, whether it be University of Minnesota Morris or whether it be at St. Cloud State. And in fact, that's where all the agriculture is, and a lot of the kids don't want to go that far away from the farm. But that is where your farmers are, and that's where your agriculture is. And it's not here in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And it'd be nice to bring agriculture back home, at least the education of it, one way or another, whether it be in any of those colleges in outstate. So just with that in mind, I think we need to expand the program that we have. It's a good program at the U of M. Not saying it's not. But we need, I know growing up on a farm, I was one that didn't want to drift too far away from home. But I know that mentality is there. And we heard discussion yesterday in agriculture that a young farmer testified and stayed pretty close to home. But he talked about how hard it was to go up to the University of Minnesota and then yet be, you know, involved in the farming at home. But it's something we need to look at. Thank you.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's more of just a comment. Mr. Apple happens to be a great teacher. I know this firsthand because he does teach my children in Mountain Lake, and we are very fortunate to have him. And just for you, Madam Chair, it was Mr. Apple that updated myself on the meal seed programs and basically educated and updated me, and I think you and I are going to be serving together dealing with the meal seed programs. So I thank you for that, Mr. Apple. And also to follow up on Representative Heigerken's comment about not only here in the cities but also in rural Minnesota, but the same is true also. We need to make sure that we have individuals here that know and understand what's going on also out in agriculture, because there's a tremendous amount of opportunities out there. And Ms. Hinkhouse said that earlier. You know, it's not about just plowing up the sod. I mean, it's from, we're looking for accountants to veterinarians and everything in between. So we want to make sure that we're reaching out to other communities also. And I know firsthand that also I have an individual coming in serving on our intern program that's actually from a suburb up here that has absolutely no agriculture experience. But he's taken a lot of agriculture classes up here in St. Paul. He came out and toured some farms with me. He's so excited. He wants to get involved in that. And, again, I think we need to be reaching out to everybody. So thank you, Mr. Apple.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Okay. Thank you. Committee Chair.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Joel Larson. I serve as a program specialist in agricultural education in the Minnesota Department of Education. I'd like to spend a few minutes telling you a little bit about a project that we worked with, not only MealSea, but the University of Minnesota, our MinSCU partners this past year, and the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources to develop a curriculum on natural resource science. When we put the committee together, we worked this past year with many of our teachers, and we said, what do we want in a curriculum set of materials that we might provide to all of our teachers in our programs? They basically said we need something that is classroom ready, that can help us identify where the science is and what we're teaching, and that we might be able to use as we at a local level determine if this course is going to be eligible for science credit. And so as the committee worked this past year, we came to the conclusion that we needed to develop a set of curriculum, and so we developed the Natural Resource Science Curriculum. It's a set of about 130 lessons that our teachers can use to design the program for their local school. And when we first came together, we wanted to develop this model curriculum, but we soon found out that schools are on block schedule and semesters, and some are on trimesters, and some have if there's 60 different ways to cut it, there's 60 different ways that programs are put together. And so we couldn't develop a common curriculum. We needed to develop a curriculum. Thank you. We needed to develop a curriculum that that our teachers could take and develop on their own. So I'm going to walk you through what's on the CD. There are basically six units here: natural resources, sustainable ecosystem, wildlife management, employee employability in agriculture, leadership in agriculture, and supervised agricultural experience. We'll go to the sustainable ecosystems, and there are nine problem areas that are found underneath the sustainable ecosystems here. If you look at problem area 8 on the screen, you can see it's in yellow. It's invasive species. The company that we've contracted with is CARF, which is the Center for Agricultural Education, Research, and Technology. And as our people, our teachers in the field, and our representatives from the Minnesota DNR looked at what CART had in problem area 8, invasive species, it really didn't meet what we wanted here in Minnesota. And so we designed our own. And so if the technology allows me, I'm going to just real quickly go out here onto the web. And it will take us, I believe, to the DNR website under invasive species. It'll take us through our Minnesota Academic Standards Correlation. And I can go down to the invasive species, and if I wanted to develop a lesson on zebra mussels, it would take me to the DNR website, and I can come down to zebra mussel, and it'll give me the information that I need to be able to teach that unit to the students in my class. I'll go back. I think in your packet it was under prairie ecosystems. And there are 5 lessons here, and the teacher could click on the lesson on prairie restoration if the teacher wanted to do a lesson that might be one day or it might be multiple days. Over on the left side of the bar, you can see there are a number of resources. It's got the lesson. It gives you the problem areas. We can go down to the objectives, and you can see that the objectives are fairly clear for the teacher. One of the nice things that we would have here is that there are some sample tests that are available. In some of ours, we have PowerPoint presentations that are built in and transparency masters that teachers can use. If I wanted to in this area, I can click on web resources again. And it will allow me to go up to the web area here, the prairie ecosystems. And if I wanted to go to a website from the Bell Museum, I could lead the students through a discussion on prairie restoration. There's probably enough information on here that if we wanted to spend enough time on prairie restoration, we could actually take the class out of the classroom and go out and actually put the students on a prairie and do some restoration type of activities. So the lessons are designed, for the most part, to be teacher-friendly and to be usable in a variety of different ways. I'm not going to take time to go into the matrix here, but we have a matrix here. And each of these lessons that were developed were crosswalked to Minnesota's academic standards in science. And so if a teacher would like to propose that this natural resource science course be taught for science credit for graduation, the teacher can select all of the lessons that will be taught in that course, and they can do a crosswalk to the academic standards in grades 9 through 12 and it'll print the report that will say this is where the science standards are found within the course and the lessons that are being taught. We piloted this project with 16 schools last fall at our Ag Technology Conference that Tom Apple talked about. We did an in-service workshop for 80 of our high school teachers who came to St. Cloud on a Saturday morning to receive training in this. And then we're hoping that by the end of the spring we'll have trained at least half, and I'm hoping by the time we do our summer conference that every teacher in the state will have this in their hands, every one of our ag education teachers. I think we're going to do questions later, unless, Madam Chairman, there are questions now.
Are there any questions for the committee?
Representative, I'll wait. Okay, passing.
Very good. I'll let you turn back or turn the program over to Julie Keston.
I just want to say thank you. I've been so impressed from the day one that you've been working on it and watched and seeing the product. I just want to commend you publicly on this project.
Madam Chair and committee members, it's kind of a labor of love, and the teachers are really excited about this, so thank you very much.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Julie Tesh, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council, otherwise affectionately known as MEALC. And you've been hearing a lot about us this morning, and I just want to give you a quick run-through of what MEALC is about. And we are a 16-member legislative council that was created in 1997. And as Representative Morrow talked about, we were created because we did have a severe shortage of agricultural education teachers and students in the state of Minnesota. That was our problem addressed. And we were an initiative of the Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators. Our key objectives are to increase enrollment in agricultural education programs in Minnesota at the secondary, post-secondary, and farm business management levels. Second is to coordinate activities to improve programming through increased partnering with various organizations. Third, increase the scope of agricultural education geographically and programmatically, aka starting new programs. Fourth is to strengthen high school agricultural education programs and FFA chapters. And our final key objective, as you've been hearing about this morning, is acting as an umbrella organization for agricultural education in Minnesota. We also term ourselves as Team Ag Ed. We are really a team effort in agricultural education, and MEALC is able to act as that umbrella organization. Our membership, we're still trying to round out our membership with new legislators, but we do have 16 board members. And I'll just quickly run through here. Madam Chair, of course, you are a member, and we're also looking forward to having Representative Hamilton on our board as well. Senator Jim Bickerman is also one of our board members. Tom Apple, who you have met, Jim Borboom from the Department of Agriculture, Al Brutley, who is a farm business management instructor, is our Minsky representative. Then we have Kevin Dahlman, who's a governor's appointment from the Dassel area, Senator Steve Dill, Daryl Hartle from the University of Minnesota, Laura Hyden representing the Minnesota FFA Foundation, Al Levine, the Dean of CFANS at the University of Minnesota, Dan Smith with the Minnesota Department of Education, Gary Tomey, who is a farm management instructor in the Austin area. He is also president-elect of our Ag Teachers Association, Senator Leroy Stump, and also Cliff Breeze, who is a governor's appointment, and he is from the Truman area. Quick overview on funding for MEALC. Our original appropriation in 1997 was $300,000. This last year, our total state allocation was $266,445. And as you can see there, that is split into MEALC operation costs and also MEALC grants. We have a very successful grant program that goes specifically out to K-12 post-secondary and farm management programs. We are housed at the University of Minnesota, St. Paul campus, right in the Ag Ed department. We are strictly housed there, but we do follow their fiscal procedures, and therefore we pay taxes and fees, things like that, and that is the $23,832. So when you get down to brass tacks and I do my budget, I work with about $242,000 this last fiscal year. Just to go over some of our accomplishments briefly, we, in our 10-year existence, we're very proud of what we've been able to achieve. We believe that the revitalization of our University of Minnesota agricultural education program is our first and foremost achievement. We've helped enhance their scholarship program, which I'll go into a little more in depth on in a little bit. The recruitment efforts, we've increased recruitment, we've increased our numbers by about 300%. What was referenced earlier is that there was literally, I believe, about 30 students back in 1997, and now we have over 100 that are wanting to go into agricultural education. Also enhancing our agricultural education staff. We went from having one full-time faculty member to now we're up to four. And we also have a recruiter there as well working specifically with ag education. And also we initiated our Ag-Ed network, our 2+2 program. And referring back to the questions earlier, being able to take those classes out in a rural area at the community and technical colleges and then being able to seamlessly transfer to the University of Minnesota and get your degree in ag education. So another one of our accomplishments is our grant program. Also last week you had the opportunity to visit the Ag and Food Sciences Academy in Van Nuys Heights, and that is a huge accomplishment for us. Referring back to what Representative Hamilton said, everyone needs to know about agriculture. It is, in my opinion, the most important thing to know about. That is where life comes from, is agriculture. So we're happy with that school. Our teacher induction program, working with our first through third year beginning teachers, we have increased visibility for agricultural education in Minnesota. And also our public policy initiatives impacting agricultural education, talking about our academic integration, which we just did, and last year the legislature was kind enough to allow science and economic credit for agricultural education classes, and also our improved farm business management program access. Drilling down a little bit more, like I said before, our enrollment in agricultural, food, and environmental education has risen 300% in the last 10 years. And our retention, we have one of the highest retention rates at the University of Minnesota in ag education, and it's over 90%. They really pride themselves on being a family, and they really do look out for their students. Here are some current statistics for post-secondary education at the University of Minnesota. Like was referenced before, the University of Minnesota is the only place in the state of Minnesota where you can leave with a teaching license specifically for agricultural education. And as was referred to earlier, we realized that coming to the big city is somewhat of a daunting task. I did it myself coming from a town of 240, and it's a little intimidating. But what we have right now is we have 66 students on the Twin Cities campus, 30 at Crookston. They stay all 4 years in Crookston, and they take classes via ITV, some of their education classes with the University of Minnesota. And then we have 10 students at partner institutions. Currently in May, we will be having 18 students graduating, and this week we sent out 13 student teachers around the state. So right now they're out doing their practice teaching, and we also have 50 current graduate students working on agricultural education. This is just a map of Minnesota showing our partner institutions that we do have articulation agreements with for agricultural education. Obviously Crookston, they can stay all 4 years there, or they can do two and transfer down to the Twin Cities. Also Central Lakes College in Brainerd, Ridgewater College in Willmar, South Central College in Mankato, and also Minnesota West in Worthington. And those are the programs that we currently deal with. And obviously they are in the MinSCU system, so we work with them on transferring credits and things like that. Our grants program has been very successful. We have so far awarded over $900,000 in competitive grants by MILC. What happens is local schools, post-secondary programs, ag literacy groups apply to MILC for a competitive grant. Our board, we have a committee that reviews them, and it's targeted money for their school program. The majority of it goes towards curriculum and improvements in their classroom. And so far we have about a 70% reporting rate, and we've impacted 100,193 students. That's unreplicated. Many of the things that happens in the classroom will be replicated for 3 to 10 years, depending upon what it is. Our scholarship program. In order to attract students, as we know, the cost of tuition is going up, we try and help lower that burden on them. And so far, MILC has awarded $110,000 to students wishing to study agricultural education in the state of Minnesota, whether it's at the University of Minnesota or at one of its partner institutions. And we've also been able to leverage another $200,000 yearly from the University of Minnesota, the FFA Foundation, and places like that. So we really have been able to put together some nice packages for students wishing to study ag education. Like I mentioned previously, the Ag and Food Sciences Academy is something we are very proud of, and they are still a young school. you know, they're still putting up their greenhouse and they're still doing many things, but they're still a young school, but they're doing many wonderful things. And you'll see them around here on our FFA Day at the Capitol on the 22nd of February, and they're doing some great things. Kids in the middle of Minneapolis who had no clue what a cow was now look forward to seeing animals and learning about them and want to go and work on farms and work in rural areas. And then also our teacher induction program, we can educate these students at the secondary level and then post-secondary level, and then we kick them out, tell them, go do good things, go teach. We had a very high turnover rate because it is tough being a teacher. And for our first through third year teachers, what we have developed is a teacher induction program. And our teachers, they're a cohort, they meet about quarterly to discuss their obstacles and opportunities while they're teaching and to let each other know, hey, it's okay. We're all going through this as well. They're paired with experienced mentors who were agricultural education instructors, and it guides them through the first few years of teaching. And this is all coordinated, and research is done for TIP at the University of Minnesota Ag Education Department. And the really great thing is that this has been so successful that they're also working with all of CTE, Career and Technical Education, with the Department of Education. So that's been really fun to see this program survive. And we have a much higher retention rate for our teachers now. And visioning into the future, these are our partners. We look forward to continuing work with our partners and also increasing them. But the Minnesota Legislature, obviously, Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators, the Minnesota FFA Association, Foundation and Alumni, the University of Minnesota, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, Minnesota Department of Education, and also the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And with that, I'd like to thank you for your time, and I would like to introduce Jerry Schoenfeld, Executive Director for the Minnesota Association of Ag Educators.
Madam Chair, my name is Jerry Schoenfeld. Today I'm wearing one of several hats that many of you know that I work with around here, but I also, as well as lobbying for the Minnesota Association of Ag Educators, I also act as their Executive Director and have for about the past 10 years. My background is that I have an ag education degree myself, taught for 5 years from high school through college level back so many years ago that nobody can remember it anymore, but I have had that experience in the past. I would like to point out some things about this. Many of you probably on this committee served on but took ag education programs probably when you went through high school. To paraphrase a little bit about the commercial from a few years ago that said, this is not your father's Buick, ag education is not your father's ag education either. It's changed a great deal over the last number of years. Probably many of you that might have had it in high school would have been in a program that might have had ag 1, 2, 3, 4. It probably would have had close to 100% participation with FFA. FFA is an integral part of ag education, traditionally, and in addition to that, some of you may have been involved in supervised ag experience programs. The reason I bring this up is because I think it's necessary to recognize that I want to talk a little bit about changes that have taken place over the years that have negatively impacted, I think, some of the things that ag education has to offer. But the fact that, for instance, the FFA experience provides opportunities for leadership, I think, like none other in high schools. And I think, in addition to that, it is an intracurricular activity, not an extracurricular activity, that is part of the educational experience. It is an FFA that students are able to, some years ago we talked about outcome-based learning, the ability to assess what students learn in the field as such. That's what FFA does. It provides opportunities for students to go out and compete against school to school, as an example, and prove what they've learned in the classroom. Take it from theory to hands-on application. The Supervised Agricultural Experience Program is similar in the fact that it's like an internship program, that the instructor works with his individual students and an agribusiness that he may be working at through somewhat of an internship program. Now, traditionally, if you went back to some of you that had Ag 1, 2, 3, 4 or such in high school, you would recognize that in most cases, your ag teacher at that time worked on a year-round basis. Most ag teachers were on 12 nights contracts. They work through the summer, whether it was with students that took animals to the county fair or whether it was students on SAE programs where they would visit on a monthly basis. There even was one point in time in which three times a year, ag teachers went to the home of every single student in their class. And some of you may remember that if you went through those kind of programs. It was as much hands-on and as much parental involvement and as much close activity between teacher, student, and parent as probably any program ever existed. And because of that, I think it had a very positive outcome all the way around. So ag education programs has a balanced utilization of three core areas. One is classroom and laboratory instruction. And we've tried to show you today what we've been trying to do to improve the quality of that classroom instruction. It might be mentioned as well, I don't think it was mentioned when Mr. Larson was here, up here, or at least not dealt upon, that the first of the curriculum that we put forth was the natural resource curriculum. But in addition to that, animal science and plant sciences are also being followed along the same framework, so that will be available as we move on, along with ag economics. So it's not just that one curriculum that we're dealing with. Secondly, the supervised ag experience program, where they are expected to have work-related experiences. Traditionally, in the old ag programs, 1, 2, 3, 4, that you may have grown up in, it would have been on the farm for the most part. But today, most of our students are not from the farm. It is, even in rural areas, that is true. And in addition to that, I might point out, for instance, Representative Heidgerker, you spoke to the fact that farm kids moving to St. Paul and so forth, and I understand that. But you also must be aware, I think, as a committee, that it is unlikely that we would ever be able to serve agriculture in all of its capacities, whether it's biotechnology or agribusiness or whatever we're looking at there, by only dealing with farm kids. That was a traditional pool that we used many years ago, and it was able to serve that as a base. But today, if you looked at the University of Minnesota College of Agricultural Campus as an example, they have probably close to 50 or 60% of their students that do not come from agricultural backgrounds that go into those kinds of areas. For those of you that went to AFSA last week and took a look at that high school program, you recognize that there isn't a single student there that came from an agricultural background, and yet 40% of those students, once they graduate from high school, go on into ag programs on a college level. And so it's necessary to extend us beyond just rural applications, and we have done that. And quite frankly, some of our most successful programs are in metropolitan-type situations. But it is also necessary to improve attitude, I think, amongst our rural people. Unfortunately, for a number of years, there were a lot of farmers that said, the last thing I want my son to do is go back into agriculture. I think that's changed with $3.70 corn now. But that is something that was there for a long time, and that's one of the things we battled in a lot of the rural programs. I was speaking with Representative Faust the other day in his office, and he indicated that one of his local ag teachers said that the way that I get students into ag programs is not to use the word agriculture. And it is, I think that's unfortunate. But it is a situation that that in some areas must be dealt with. The last thing is the FFA student organization activities. On February 22nd, this institution will be invaded by a bunch of blue coats. And all of you are aware of the FFA blue jacket. And we'll have many hundreds of students up here that day going through the halls telling you how important FFA activities are to them. It is an excellent opportunity for leadership skills. You might be surprised if you look at your colleagues and your past colleagues to actually start examining how many of you have come through FFA leadership programs. When I served here, half of the people that were on the Higher Education Committee at that point in time were people that had been FFA presidents or district officers or the like. And there are still many in the legislature if you actually investigate the backgrounds. That's how they got into this area. Personally, I learned more politics in ag education courses than I learned in my civics classes, because it is in the ag education courses that I learned about the cooperative movements and the movements of agriculture throughout the ages, whether it was the Farmers Union development or the Farm Bureau development or the Grange or all of the different things that led into legislative activity that just like this committee deals with, that was a cornerstone, the politics of agriculture. And that is where we get many of our leaders through the FFA. But it also has great opportunities for careers. Underestimated opportunities, in my opinion. It's easy to look at statistics and everybody can come up with their own numbers, but you have all seen them. We can range anywhere from 20 to 35% of the state's employment in agriculture, those kinds of numbers that you've seen, depending upon how you count those numbers. But agricultural education students can prepare for more than 300 related careers. That's one of the problems we have in ag education. When people graduate with ag ed degrees, they are prepared for so many different areas that some of them end up in the state legislature. Representative Butts, Fenstead, I believe, is an ag ed graduate. And others end up in agribusiness, and others end up in marketing, and a lot of other kinds of areas. And it is tough to compete, particularly with the amount of money that is paid to educators, with some of the agribusiness out there. And that's why we do lose a lot of our ag ed people. Even when they graduate with ag ed degrees, they go into other areas. We have 350,000 jobs in Minnesota related to agriculture. This is more jobs than 3M, Target, and Northwest Airlines combined. And if you think about the effort that goes into helping with ag education in the state compared to what we would do in any of those other three areas, it's not exactly apples and apples, but it is an interesting thing to consider. The other thing about ag education that I'd like to kind of imprint on everyone's mind, if it were possible, is this. Ag education is somewhat of a unique system in education. And I think sometimes so taken for granted that people don't recognize the uniqueness of it. First of all, it's a program of study. And it is not just a class. It is more than a class by integrating FFA, by integrating SAE activities, by integrating classroom learning. It is a program of study that is more than simply a class. It involves interdisciplinary learning, something that I think most teachers in all professional areas would like to be able to do, to expand beyond one particular thing where we're dealing with science, math, economics, hands-on type experience, maybe even down to carpentry skills, whatever it might be, but it's an interdisciplinary type of learning. It's experiential learning. Most of the ag ed programs and most of, for instance, the curriculum that you looked at deals with laboratory experiences. It deals with hands-on experiences in the field. It goes beyond the classroom, beyond the theory, and puts it into a practical application that students both understand and appreciate and enjoy to learn and makes it become real to them. It utilizes problem-solving techniques. I'm fortunate today to have with me my wife sitting in the audience, and one of the things that we always talk about is the different way that she looks at problems than the way that I look at problems. And I said, well, the reason you don't see them the same way is because I had an ag ed degree that taught me a problem-solving method that starts and says, you know, define the problem, find the alternatives, and move on and so forth. And I think that's a valuable thing, and it's an educational tool that in many other applications is not as easily applied. It also is a community-based experience. For those of you that went back in those Ag 1, 2, 3, 4 type programs, you recognize that the ag teacher, there was an old kind of a thing that always used to be said in the rural schools, you know, if you want to learn about everything that's happening in the community and what's happening in the school, go down to the furnace room where the three people that run the school are sitting playing cribbage. It's the ag teacher, the superintendent, and the janitor, the three people that run the school. And that's kind of a humorous kind of an approach to it. But what I'm really getting at is that ag educators oftentimes have been very involved in community activities because it goes beyond the 9 months of the classroom and out into whether it's the county fairs or the extension service and working with farmers or all those kinds of things and with agribusiness in the community through the SAE programs. It also has high parental involvement, something, however, that we're losing compared to where we used to be. As I mentioned to you before, ag programs used to be on a 12-9 basis, and it used to be a situation where the instructor met individually at least 3 times a year with both the parents and the students to talk about the program of learning that they were in, to get to know the families. It's the kind of thing that I think most every teacher would like to be able to do. but it used to be a part of the program and is still part of the program in many cases, but is slipping away. It has measurable student achievement through continuity of classroom instruction, FFA, and SAE, as I mentioned. One of the other things that it has, and I think you may get a sense of that, I work with the MAAE, and one of the things you may get a sense of is that this is an organization of educators, small in numbers, but that really do take a proactive approach to dealing with their educational area. And part of that is mentoring and peer review amongst the educators. And part of that is because they all compete against each other through the FFA program and other kinds. So unlike many educators, where probably a math teacher, for instance, in a high school may not know what the math teacher in the next high school is doing, in most cases the ag teacher in the high school does know what the ag teacher in the next school is doing. And there is a peer review there that takes place that I think helps uplift some of the quality as well. And it's also true of the students, because we involve students in 9th grade through 12th, for instance, that work together. And the younger students might learn from the older students and so forth and from the different experiences within the class. One of the other things I think that is oftentimes missed is it's a seamless, multi-track education opportunity. We have a very high percentage of our students that go on to college. We also have a percentage of students that goes on other types of tracks, with career opportunities immediately or after taking some two-year program post-high. And lastly, excellent youth leadership education through the FFA and through the SAE experience. The reason I took the time to talk about these particular things is because I think they give you an idea of something that is unique in part and something that is valuable, I would hope you'd think. But there are some problems with some of the things because of the way education has gone. We've increased academic standards. As ag educators, we're up to the task of dealing with that. We're able to participate in science standards and economics and so forth, as we've shown. But the time requirements that are required now, the governor is talking about, for instance, additional languages. We would hope that as the legislature takes a look at that, they'd also consider not only on the high school level, but also in the grade level, in 1 through 6 grade level as well. Both from the opportunity of students learning, because they probably can learn better at that area in some of the language things, or at least have good opportunities in that area, but also in terms of the competition for time elements. In addition to that, one of the other things is that I had mentioned to you that many of the activities are year-round opportunities, and yet because of our funding sources and the way it's changed over the years, there was a time when every ag program in the state was a 12-month program. There are still, Mr. Apple, I believe, is still on a 12-month, nope, I'm wrong, 11-month contract. But many of the opportunities for ag education extend into the summer. It makes sense. That's when agriculture happens for the most part. And so it's one of the things that we feel we are losing. There are many schools, about half of our schools in the state do have some summer teaching programs, but we are losing them. And that involves funding for career and technical programs in general. But specifically in ag programs. Career and technical, for instance, used to be funded about $12 million a year by the state legislature in an appropriation. Presently, it's under a discretionary levy. There's no longer specific funding in that area. Ag programs received approximately a third of that funding and still do under the discretionary levy. The other thing I might point out is that we talk about, for instance, one of the first slides that Dacia showed you was the participation in FFA. It is now at about, I think, about 35-40% of the student population. It used to be closer to 100%. So there are many students now, because of contractual changes, because of changes in the amount of time that is available and so forth, that no longer are participating in those areas that we feel is a loss for them. The other is college availability. It was discussed by Representative Morrow, Representative Heidgerker. We've made strides in that, working with MLC, trying to improve that. But many of these initiatives that you've seen have been initiated by the Minnesota Association of Ag Educators, number one, as a group, working through another partner, which is MLC. And yet, MLC has not had one dime of increase in its funding since 1997 when it was originated. It has actually reduced the amount of funding, as you saw by those numbers, because of funding, because of the internal revenue sharing and other things that the university charges it. So we've actually gone backwards. It's one of the few kind of quasi-state agencies that has had no increase in funding since 1997, and we are bringing a piece of legislation this forward to try and address that this year. The last thing that I would say is that we have made great strides in our college efforts to improve the number of ag educators in the state, but still need a great deal more in that area. So I hope we've given you an impression today of what ag education is about. I think it's kind of one of the jewels that sometimes is overlooked in our educational system.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Not sure.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for the group for coming. And I just I think you're right. Basically, all the people we've heard from and your group and others are good at thinking outside the box and trying to address this program. And you've talked about your last 10 years of efforts and how they're paying off in a big way, I think. Question I have, and I've had for a number of years, and I think there's some good examples I'll use just around this table. When Mr. Apple talked about the how difficult it is to fill positions out there and to get folks to teach ag in our schools, and I know that's a real problem, and that's part of your mission, obviously, is to fill that. Yet, Representative Heigerken brought up, I think, a very good point, and it's not. I'm going to go beyond. He said kids don't necessarily always like to come from the farm and hang out in St. Paul for 4 years when they've got their farm stuff and their other things back home yet, so it's nice to get a school closer. I agree with that. But I think that's also true for adults. And, you know, if I look around this table, two things I would mention. Number one, in my case, I have a degree in soil science and I have a degree in agronomy. Now, I've thought, well, maybe it'd be interesting to teach in the summer or the fall when I'm not here in the legislature or something else. What do I need to do? Well, I need to get a ag education teaching certificate. And so I've asked the University of Minnesota how you do that. Well, you have to come back to school for a year. Well, I can't come back to school for a year. You know, but now with technology online, like Representative Heigerken said, maybe St. Cloud State, U of M Morris, there's schools out there that may be more accessible to me than the 2.5-hour drive into St. Paul. But again, I don't know how I would do that mixing the career I'm in now and getting that. The other side of that coin is we have Representative Erdahl and Representative Heigerken sitting here who have teaching certificates. They're not that old yet. They could, well, Bud's a little bit, but you're still young. And they're retired, yet how do we get, if we got them a year's worth of classes, maybe Representative Erdahl would be interested in teaching a dairy production class in the fall at one of the schools in our area and could fill in with some of this, yet how do we get him, you know, those courses and that coursework so that now he can take a certificate and move it into an ag classroom? And again, it's very difficult because, again, he'd probably have to take a year off or at least a semester or two and at some time and come back and get that training. So, you know, I think there is some experience out there. And you can go farm by farm. You can go through our community. There's a lot of people with ag degrees out there, other things that at some point may like to move into the classroom. And how do we address that? I think there is a wealth of experience and folks that want to do that out there. You know, in the summer, maybe, you know, you do have a research course in the summer where we're laying out test plots and things. We're available for that. I mean, there's things we can do. So have you thought about that at all? And how do we do that in this great state of ours with this great education system? There should be a way to accomplish that, I would think.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll take a first stab, and I think we've got a lot of other people that probably are a little more into the licensing, as Mr. Smith from the Department of Education might be able to address that even more clearly. But I can tell you from the University of Minnesota, for instance, they do outreach programs. Our association with the Minnesota Ag Educators Association we are the ones that help to direct, for instance, at our Ag Tech Conference or at our summer conventions, specific you know, workshops and so forth that receive University of Minnesota credit, for instance, that would be able to be picked up in that area. It was talked about before, for instance, the genomics at Mayo and other kinds of things, that there are programs out there where you can do that. The induction program traditionally has had, and I guess I don't know right now, but I believe it still does, the induction program, for instance, with first through third year students are situations where university personnel go out into the field and work with young instructors, and in addition to that, I believe in years past, also brought in people, for instance, with agronomy degrees that would try to get upgraded to an ag ed kind of a degree. But there are licensure issues that I don't know if you care to go in that much detail, but probably Mr. Smith would be the one that could give you the best answer on that, who's in the audience here.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Representative Dan Smith, Minnesota Department of Education, Supervisor of Adult and Career Education. And specifically, in terms of encouraging individuals to move into teaching and making opportunities available, of course, the rules for teacher licensure are appropriately with the Minnesota Board of Teaching, and the department administers licensure rules that are developed by that board. We have, using some federal funds for career and technical education under the Carl Perkins Act, supported positions at both the University of Minnesota and Bemidji State University, where individuals on staff at those two institutions will review the credentials of people interested in moving into teaching and develop individual plans for them to expedite that process as much as possible. I can't say that there wouldn't be some work involved, clearly we've done what we can to try to smooth that process.
So, Madam Chair, do you think that there's opportunity for folks out there that wouldn't have to actually take a year off and go to school for distance learning or other things? Again, specifically in ag education, obviously we're talking about here, but how would someone from Mountain Lake do that?
Mr. Smith?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative. There are certainly, we have worked with both the University of Minnesota and Bemidji State University to provide many of the required courses for licensure online. I can't speak specifically about an individual's program. That's why we have staff at the two institutions, and under the rules of the Board of Teaching, it would be a recommendation from those institutions for licensure. So it would be best to get that question answered by those institutions, but we have certainly funded folks to make that as smooth as possible.
Sure. And Madam Chair, just to follow up, and I'm not picking on anyone, but I did ask that institution, is University of Minnesota, St. Paul, how do I get my teaching license? Come on back for a year, Representative Junkie, you can get it. That was the answer from that institution that you just gave me. So, I think somehow we have to figure out a way around that to bring some of these experts in and people in around the state that may be interested that just can't take a year off to come on in and get your teaching certificate, or vice versa, to pick up some of the college agriculture classes on production agriculture and other things that they may be interested in to enhance their degrees.
If I may, Madam Chair, Representative, I was reminded by Mr. Schoenfeld, thank you, there also is the opportunity under licensure rules in Minnesota to get what is referred to as a temporary limited license, and which gives people up to three and up to 5 years while they are teaching to complete the requirements for teaching, but they can be employed in that position. So there are avenues available. I certainly can't speak to the response you've gotten from the University of Minnesota. I have no knowledge there, but we've done what we can.
Thank you. And some advice. There are other majors that have, I went back and got my master's on the weekends with a newborn baby. So I know that there are ways to do that. Maybe we have to look at replicating some of those kind of programs in other areas.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, one more quick. I agree with you, but then the secondary to that is for your group, Jerry and for the folks on us. Somehow you have to recruit people out there and tell them this is available. I know there's people interested across the state. They probably haven't even thought about it. Or they have, and they're just, there's nowhere that they've seen that light bulb come on and say, you know, while out in Western Minnesota, you know, where Representative Eakin is, you know, I've got a degree, I could go into one of those school districts and teach a course. I didn't realize there was a 3 to 5 year temporary license that gives me time to work on things. There are routes for me. But I don't think that's being promoted out there. And again, because your group keeps saying there's a shortage, I agree. So I think we have to somehow get that word out there also that there may be avenues available to get some of these folks into the classroom.
In response to that, too, there it's a provisional, and it's 3 years, and that's been available, I think, forever for any type of subject area. Hydrogen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. To that point, and I'm glad that, good seeing you again, Mr. Schoenfeld, that you did bring up that there's the alternative licensure issues, and it's something that we've debated within the K-12 education last year with the not only the board, but with Ed Minnesota, among other forces at the table. And in order for us to allow for exceptions, you're opening up a real big can of worms. And I tell you, for teachers out there, they will get very, very, very active against any changes in the way we license our teachers. But there are programs available where, Representative Junkie, I think some of you get the wrong answer. There are alternative licensures that you can get, especially in areas where there's a shortage, and this is a shortage area. And I know that there are some offered out there, and so I don't think you got the right answer, but I do have some questions for the other testifiers, if I may now or not.
Okay, I'm sure, I just wonder if I could just follow up quick, just very quick. I would also represent Heidgerk, who did work last year, for instance, on some of the alternatives to Board of Teaching and so forth. I might point out as well that we were the only education group that got up and supported those changes to try and do exactly what you're talking about. Other education groups did not support those, but we did.
And okay, with that, again, it's good to see Deja here again, and I was a former member of Mel C, and with you were Representative Trimba, so I remember driving down and coming to and fro to the Capitol at the St. Paul for the meetings, and it was very educational. But I think that an important component has not been brought up today. To represent Junkie, I'm back in a restaurant again, so I'm not unemployed again. I'm back at it again, so I'm an employer again.
What's his name?
But anyways, we're not going to go there. But we have a Charlie's Cafe. We have the 4-H that meets just about every week. The Stearns County comes down there, and just about a different parts of the 4-H club meets in a restaurant, and I oftentimes go down there and visit with them, and they get me involved in their programs. And Representative Junkie, I know that you're a good supporter up in County Life County, Representative Riddle, but they have a very, very active organization, yeah. And they're very active. And I used to be a wrestling coach, and I know that in order to build a successful program, you have to have kids wrestlers. You have to start that program down in kindergarten, first and second grade. And what's nice about the 4-H program is something we've been trying and been talking about, K-12 education, for those of you on that committee, is parent involvement. And you see it there in the 4-H. And I think that it's something that the University of Minnesota, Representative Finstead and Representative Eakin, remember a number of years ago, cut back in the extension program some of the funding that used to go to 4-H programs. But they are very, very important. But it builds from there. We have a good FFA program. There's some school districts that do a very good job, and it lies within the teachers again. I belong to the FFA advisory group over at Sauk Center. Sauk Center has over 100 members, students, that belong to the FFA, a good teacher that identifies with agriculture. And what they do over there, they say it's not just the ag teacher that we're trying to produce, but we've got jobs available, whether it be Representative Junkie, you talked about the agronomy, we've got jobs in fertilizer, we've got jobs in pesticides, I've got seven implement dealers in my district, and none of them can find enough employees. None of them. And that's where I think, that's where we need to all get, there was a thought brought up by Mr. Schoenfield here. And it's very, very serious to the future of agriculture and serious of auto mechanics and the serious of industrial arts. The governor's got some good initiatives within his K-12 bill. The eighth grade, they have to, the students have to find an area which they're interested in. And by a senior year, they can take a vocational class now, or they can take a college or whatever college class, whether it be a two-year school or a four-year school. Within that senior year, the college, the high school campuses all have to offer that. We have one funding mechanism that Mr. Schoenfield brought up that's called discretionary levy. And it's something that I think in order for us, at least the schools that I've been around in my district, we don't have the shops we used to have. More than ever, we're going to need a money mechanism in order to get those students introduced to industrial arts, auto mechanics, diesel mechanics, all of these job-related jobs that are out there yet, that there's a shortage of. But the threat, and I'm just in the process of cloning the governor's initiatives, Representative Gravin asked me if I would present them in K-12 finance, and there's components in there that the foreign language aspect you brought up. The minute you require 4 years of foreign language, there's only so many periods in a day that a student can take a class. And when you teach just the standards, basically, we had that little battle with FIED becoming a requirement. If that would have became a requirement, it would have been one less period for a student to make a choice, whether it be ag or industrial arts or whatever. But we got to be very, very concerned when we start adding a requirement for another class. And the foreign language, that bill will be coming up very shortly within K-12, and I will do what I can to defeat it. But again, we're going to need some real members to get on board and say, hey, it's just going to, we don't have enough periods in a day to require 4 years of foreign language. With that said, thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
I was mesmerized. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to, first of all, commend you for what you've done. It was an excellent curriculum. It's important that you've been proactive because it certainly helps to keep your program viable. I represent a district that has, I think, four pretty active FFA chapters, a couple of them having over 100 members. And I think that where I have one area that doesn't have any, and I think it's a very important part of the school curriculum to have FFA and to have your program going. As a former history teacher, I'm going to go into history just a little bit here. I don't know if everyone realizes this, but the 1997 MILC is kind of the second generation. There actually was another one back, I don't know when that one started, but I was appointed in the mid-1990s. And in fact, with Ag in the Classroom, I wrote a social studies curriculum that tied agriculture to social studies. But the MILC that I was on didn't just have its funding cut by Governor Carlson, they wiped it out. And so shortly thereafter, we disbanded. So I was a member of one of the state agencies that quit. But I'm glad that it came back in 1997, and I'll look forward to more of the good work you're doing.
Representative Vincent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I want to go back to your testimony, Representative Schoenfeld. I just want to point something out. You talked about your problem-solving styles, and I'm just going to, for the record, probably point out that your wife's styles are probably the one that wins out every time, I would assume. And thank you for being here, and thank you for letting him do what he does, because it's a great job, and you do great work on behalf of AgEd. And You brought up a couple good points that got me thinking a little bit about the uniqueness of the ag ed profession, and you talked about the classroom type job. And when you think about it, you think about math teachers, science teachers, and you can go down the list. Ag teachers are definitely unique because of the components of FFA, the on-the-farm visits, the corn drives, the different things they do to get out into the community. And they really do, I would say, get to know the students and the families of those students pretty darn well. And I don't want to get into a us versus them approach, but I would say it's probably better than maybe just a run-of-the-mill math teacher. They're probably not going on corn drives or going home to meet the family to talk about algebra. So it is it's a good point that I think we need to make clear that they are a unique profession. I also want to point out, and Representative Junkie and a few others have talked about this, that the future farmers of this state, the future agronomists of this state, the future, you can go down the list, state legislators of this state are products of our ag ed programs, and more specifically our ag teachers. So I think it's, again, I wear this on my sleeve because I have an ag ed degree from the U of M and I'm pretty proud of it. But it is something that we need to not only support verbally, but then also when it comes down to as we're crafting legislation, how can we look at the Ag Education Leadership Council? How can we look at the University of Minnesota funding when we talk about ag specials and different things when it comes to ag ed? And what can we do to not only meet the needs, but how can we help to build for the future? And I know that we have the groundwork set. You two up there should be very proud of the work that you've done. You look at the charts, the facts, the figures, and it always goes back to about the time I graduated is when things turned around and got better there. So maybe it was me leaving is what spurred the growth. But, yeah, we graduated at the same time, so maybe both of us. But I just want to thank you both for the work that you've done and really point out that we've gone a long ways, but we have a long ways to go. And with that, we, as a legislature, hopefully can help you get there. So thank you.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with Representative Finstad in congratulating on your work, and I'd just like to follow up on an earlier question about the leadership council you have. I know that of at least one rural private college that's looking to bring its secondary education program into the 21st century and serve rural Minnesota. Would it be appropriate to have representation on leadership council from the Minnesota private colleges? Perhaps you've already made that invitation and it hasn't worked in the past, but I would like to know whether there's a private college role on the council.
Madam Chair, Representative Morrow, that is a very good suggestion. We are by statute in the state of Minnesota, and right now the University of Minnesota and MinSCU have representation, but I know I would be open to private college representation as well. It would just have to be a change in that, in our structure on our board, but that would definitely be a great suggestion because that is something, that is an area of education I did not represent it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Well, in
well, Madam Chair,
Representative.
I was just asking Representative Morrow if he's going to write up and carry that bill because I think there's a number of us that would sign on to that.
I'd be happy to carry that.
Thank you. Just an editorial piece. We know that 75% of the jobs out there are vocational jobs. And in defense of family and consumer science teachers who are fading away in the fact that, you know, 80% of our healthcare dollars are preventable, and we have no one there to plan and prepare a healthy meal, which goes with the sciences. And so we need to be partnering that whole piece of vocational and the planting of the seed to the feeding at the table. Any other questions for the testifiers? We have one more person to come to the table. So
thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Borbo, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I'm here today to talk about our Agriculture in the Classroom program. This is a focus on elementary level students, K through 12 students, not on the vocational education program. Mike Schomer is our communications director, and Mike does the supervision for the SAG in the classroom program, and he had a conflict, so I'm happy to join you today to talk about this program. The Minnesota Ag in the Classroom program actually celebrated its 20th anniversary this last fall. And a lot has changed in those 20 years, and one thing that has not changed, though, is the need for agriculture literacy in the state of Minnesota. In fact, I think it's even more important today for Minnesota's ag community to explain its value to the majority of Minnesotans who no longer live or work on a farm. Minnesota's Ag in the Classroom program began shortly after then-Secretary of John Block shared his vision for a new approach to ag literacy. Secretary Block challenged states to develop a literacy program that went beyond the traditional vocational agriculture program. You've heard a lot about vocational agriculture programs, and Jerry Schoenfeld talked about the traditional 1, 2, 3, 4 ag ed programs, and that was the type of program that was taught 20 years ago. But at the same time, during those programs, we knew that we were seeing changes in agriculture and changes in the number of people that actually lived and worked on farms. And so Secretary Block challenged the Minnesotans to say, what can we do to help create agricultural literacy? One of the things that I know that as a student in ag education at the University of Minnesota more than 20 years ago is interesting. I was thinking as I was listening to Jerry Schoenfeld talk about the profile of the students in ag education. I believe that I had about 40 classmates, and about 90% of those students were from farm backgrounds and rural areas. And today, as Jerry Schoenfeld mentioned, that's a much different number. Ag in the Classroom program began to a lot of hard work and efforts of some visionary people and leaders that began 20 years ago. And it has thrived thanks to the hard work of dedicated people like Al Withers. In your handouts or on your desk today, you should have some sample of some ag mags. These are documents that we use, or programs, I should say, that are used by our classroom instructors, teachers, elementary teachers that work with this Ag in the Classroom program. It's a partnership, again, with our Al Withers as our staff person, and we have a group of people that write this AgMag publication, and there's various curriculums in this publication that focus on either animal science or food science or natural resources or whatever it is. But this program is a partnership that existed or began again 20 years ago, and our role at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture is to primarily provide the program and administrative support. We work with a board called the Ag in the Classroom Board. It's a nonprofit entity made up of about 12 members, and that board's primarily responsibility is to do the fundraising and make sure that there is support for the Ag in the Classroom program. And our role at the Department of Agriculture is, again, development of publications like the Ag Mag and development and delivery of these programs. Another program that we work with is the Minnesota Food Project, or Minnesota Project Food, Land, and People, talks about the benefits of Minnesota agriculture to a wide variety of people. A couple years ago, or 3 years ago, those of you in the legislature, you may remember that we proposed handing off this program from a state agency to a private entity, or looking at some other entity to host this program. That was a very good learning experience for me, and many conversations I had with legislators as well as people involved in the Ag in the Classroom program. They came back and said to me that they value the partnership of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And I clearly remember one of the volunteers that works in the school curriculum and works with the Ag Mag said, when I go to a high school, I want to be a representative of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, not some other farm organization or farm business. So it was, quite honestly, a good learning experience for me that I did really appreciate or learn to appreciate the value that we have to the partnership. And I also learned the wide, wide level of commitment and enthusiasm that people have about the Ag in the Classroom program. Today we fund the program through a contribution of support from three of our divisions, our dairy and food division, our lab division, and our pesticide and fertilizer management division. So we certainly appreciate the last 20 years and the value of the partnership that we've brought to this program. We look forward to continuing for the next 20 years or more. And as you look at Ag in the Classroom and the question about agriculture literacy and the awareness and the appreciation of agriculture, it certainly is a place to begin the discussion at the K through 12 level. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Representative Fellows?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This looks like really good information in here. What percentage of the schools are using this right now in their K through 8 grades?
Madam Chair, Representative Fellows, I'd have to check with Al Weathers or to get you an exact number on that. I ballpark. I still have to even guess. It's a fairly high number. Fairly high percentage, but I'd like to get back to you on that.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I was just taking a look at some of the handouts, and in there you have Minnesota Agriculture in the Classroom, and you turn around about on the back, and it says financial stakeholders, and you have a list of individuals, cooperatives, and major business sectors. And you could talk the positives as far as the economic impact and others about any single one of these. But if you take the third one on the list, which I can speak of, it has Christensen Farms. And in there, specifically, it's a Minnesota family-owned business. And they hire individuals in accounting, as analysts, data entry, construction, transportation logistics, human resources, business development, production and production management, research, vet services, nutritionists, mill operators, mechanics, maintenance, agronomists, insurance and business coordinators, and benefits coordinators, safety coordinators, people dealing in genetics and genomics. The list goes on and on and on. There is a tremendous amount of opportunity in agriculture. And like I said, I just picked out one entity, one Minnesota family-owned entity, and you could talk about that on any one of these on the list, whether it's a major business sector, cooperatives, or individuals. The opportunities in agriculture are phenomenal, and we have to get that word out. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? I've done some subbing, and almost every school that I sub in has Ag in the Classroom, and I've always found it very interesting and very accurate, quite frankly, in most cases. There's always things that we disagree on, but I think if you need more on your website, I believe there is a lot more information about Ag in the Classroom if you want to.
Yes, Madam Chair, there is an excellent website on our agency website about Ag in the Classroom program, and this is a national program as well, so there's certainly a lot of resources for teachers and volunteers who want to further talk about agricultural literacy.
Any questions? Thank you for coming. We need to re-refer a bill, Health File 284, Special Assessment Deferments. I think that's all that has to be, right? Any other business? Maybe it's adjourned.